Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Treehouse, episode 43, Blazing Salads, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Yes, it is. A very good morning to everybody. Here we go again with another 5 hours of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity. And the reason I increase the imaginary length of the show, perhaps, a very good morning to you, perhaps, is because we have an avalanche of stuff, not only from the steamed and pressed listenership, but the usual preamble I give to the show, which I try to make as concise as possible. Which I was sitting upstairs and going through the usual bureaus I look at and thinking, no, not another one, not another one, not another one. So I'll probably spread them out over the next few programs. If you've never heard us before, well, we knuckle straight down to the show, and what we try to do is take a deed poll with people's opinions and anecdotes for the ages.
Scrutinize.
With an intense scrut. But for instance, I could tell you this, and already here we are spreading out in all directions, perhaps. The shower I was having before the show, if you can bear to sustain such a revolting thought, the shower I was having before the show, I wrote a song in the shower, and I don't know what to do with it. It is one of the great earworms of all time. It makes baked potato look like a lot of fuss about nothing. I may at some point, if we get slow, bring you a brand new song. Let me put that another way. The only song I've ever written.
But this is strange.
Go
because
on.
That relates to my story of a dream.
Oh.
That we had, one of our topics is about dreams. I dreamt last week that I was with my mum and we were listening to a 60s sort of Merseybeat tune. I had never heard it before and it was a really good song. And my mum said in the dream, oh, I learned to play the guitar to this. My mum's never played the guitar in her life. And I woke up and I suddenly thought, I wrote a song in that dream. I had never heard that song.
That's how yesterday got going.
I wrote that song. Now I couldn't tell you a note or a word of it. But I had a moment of, I wrote a really good 60s song in my sleep.
In my interview with Michael Jackson, if you will, he kept saying, a lot of my D's come to me in sleep. And I had no idea what a D's was. And as we left, I said to the press officer, did he say D's? She went, yeah, it's melody. It's what he calls melodies. Never heard it before or since.
No.
Anyway, you have a lot in common, if that's not a slander.
It's been never said before.
I've got this, and I may at one point drop this live on the internet, this song. I may have something to drop. But we stop dragging us into the world of dreams before we introduce it. Because today, when I looked at it, and not only is it the person without whom my life would not be the same, Edward Lear, is born today. I'm having to skate past the great Lear. By the way, the show starts any second now. This is not the show. If you've not heard it before, this isn't the show. We're not one of those podcasts where two people sit around blathering. Leaves gap, because there's all of your input to come. But the show starts in a second. So I've had to skate past the great Edward Lear.
Wow.
Because, I thought I was going to skate straight past the other, Florence Nightingale's birthday.
Oh.
And it always cheers me up because we know what her pet was, don't we, Peps? Well, Florence Nightingale's pet was famous for it. But its own wiki page. It was an owl, and she kept it in her pocket. She's known as the lady with the lamp, but she was actually the lady with the owl, and she kept an owl in her pocket Mary Nightingale, Florence Nightingale. The reason I changed it to Mary there is because in my diligent research, I noticed that her very best friend was Mary Clark, Clarkey. And Clarkey, it turns out, was a sensation. We need more Mary Clarks, perhaps, and less owls in this world. Clarkey was a powerhouse of a woman. Called Clarkey in her day, she was a British-born Paris salon hostess.
My dream!
Listen to this.
A Paris salon hostess.
The show starts in a second, but here we go. I haven't got round to Yogi Bear, which was going to be my main theme. But Clarkey, in 1838, her father took the family on tour in Europe. This is Florence Nightingale, where she was introduced to the English-born Parisian hostess Mary Clark, known as Clarkey. They bonded straight away. Clarkey was a stimulating hostess who did not care for her appearance, and while her ideas did not always agree with those of her guests, she was incapable of boring anyone. Her behaviour was said to be exasperating and eccentric, and she had no respect for upper-class British women, who she regarded generally as inconsequential. She said that if given the choice between being a society woman or a galley slave, she would choose the freedom of the galleys. And you go on and on and on with Clarkey. She says that Florence was inseparable for her. In 1847, Clarkey married Julius von Mold, the son of the Prime Minister to the King of Württemberg. It was said that someone coughed when she gave her age at the marriage, and so it was recorded as 39. Isn't that something?
That's a good friend as well.
Her groom was about 47. Henry James described how Madame Merle used to drop out of an omnibus, often into a mud puddle, and arrive unfazed at the door, delighting everyone with her originality and freshness. "I can see her now," said Merle, "her feet on the fender before the fire, talking rapidly, her hair flying, and her general untidiness so marked as to be picturesque." And you read, the more you read about her, she is terrific. By the way, a salon is defined as a gathering of people under the roof of an inspiring host, held partly to amuse one another and partly to refine the taste and increase the knowledge of the participants through conversation. Now this, if that isn't this show, I know we've called it, Blazing Salads, but this is a salon. Now what we'll do, tell us what we're doing, we'll get on with the show and I'll drop in both my song and the extraordinary story of Yogi Bear. Later on in the programme. What are we doing, Peps?
At number one, monsters and illnesses your parents made up.
Like the screaming abdabs. Yeah.
Number two, don't talk to me about fruit. Number three, not being believed. Number four, why buy a baby that? And as we've heard from me, number five, your best and worst dreams, brackets, be succinct.
Now, we know putting your head in a lion's mouth, asking people about their dreams, people roll their eyes, and quite rightly. So we've asked people to be succinct, because one of my favourite old lines is nobody wants to hear about other people's dreams, you know, that Martin Luther King, for example. Come on, get on with the speech. But we have some absolute pips and dandies from you in the way that we know and trust our audience. Give us something, Peps.
Well, not being believed. This starts with Steve. My favourite example is a very simple one. My friendship group at university was built on the solid foundation of watching football at the pub, especially England games. Going to university in Aberystwyth meant we became especially partisan and vocal in the face of local opposition, and the locals would quite rightly cheer for whoever England were playing. We enjoyed this so much that we would trek back there for many years after graduating to sit in the same pub just to watch England play. On one such occasion in 2001, England travelled to Germany for the vital World Cup qualifier. You may recall the result, 5-1, even Heskey scored, as goes the song. We emerged from the pub shortly after full-time, utterly delirious and worse for wear. And jubilantly marching down the street, a group of Welsh girls stopped us and asked us to score. 5-1 to England, we exclaimed. They told us, in no uncertain terms, to F off. We saw it was true. They wouldn't believe us. There was no way that England would have beaten Germany 5-1 in their own backyard. And in this being the days before smartphones, there was no way for us to verify it. In the end, we had to shrug and make our own way onwards. My big regret being we never got to be there when they discovered we were telling the truth.
Oh, not being believed. This is we had quite a glut of these a long time ago about people running into Paul McCartney just as McCartney jumped into a cab after a conversation with them, and then their friends walked around us. Guess who I've just been talking to? Mainly they tend to be about Beatles before. But again, I'm sorry if I sound particularly breathless on this one. All of these things are overwhelming, including writing a song, which I'll unveil later on in the programme, a cappella. I meant to start because out of nowhere, Peps, an email came in because Andy, who sent it, didn't know what else to do with it. And I meant to start the show with it before I got lost in Florence Nightingale's Pocket Owl, and Mary Clark and her salon, and Yogi Bear, and Edward Lear, all of which we will find time for over the years. But this from Andy requires our most wondrous music behind, because listen to this, Peps, and... I did actually, it's one of the few things I flagged last night. This, everybody, is a moment. Whatever you're doing, sit down if you're in any way. Maybe this is what inspired my song. Later on, that will explain itself. Listen to this. I'm hoping you can help me out, or maybe somebody on the treehouse. My father passed away 3 years ago. He was a social worker in Dorset. And one of his clients in the early 80s was Mickey Finn, late of T-Rex. Now, Mickey had been thrown out of his lodgings, and his relationship was a bit down on his luck when my father became his social worker. Mickey had long left the pop scene and had nowhere to live, so moved into a caravan with his mother, and I think it was his sister. Me and my dad helped him move all his gear out of his house, and I was aware of T-Rex as a 12-year-old in 82, but was far more interested then in punk and not these hippies. My dad's shed was rammed with T-Rex ephemia. Stage costumes, percussion instruments, boxes and boxes of T-Rex albums from around the world, books, pictures, you name it. The hours I spent playing with all this gear was endless, dressing up in them and playing the bongos and reading the books. I became a real fan. 4 years later, Mickey got himself sorted out and moved house, and he wanted his gear back, so came in a van to my dad's to pick it up. Once the van was full, there was still some stuff left, a box of Japanese Top of the Pops type picture albums, letters, etc., and boxes of quarter-inch tapes. He left them. It has only been recently that we rediscovered these tapes, and the recordings are of the band that are on them. I'm not sure if they're particularly special. There seem to be versions of White Swan, Hot Love, Woodland Rock, Boland's Blues, Honey Don't. There are two tapes of Mickey Finn which appear to be unreleased material. Both, I think, are albums where he sings with an unnamed woman, and another possibly laying down new work. I had my dad's old Reeboks and I played them for any hints of what else might be on them, but with no luck. I wrote to Bob Harris in 2003 when Mickey died, and we tried to contact his family to get the tapes back to him. Dad always wanted to do the right thing as a very keen music fan and a collector of many records. Being a listener to the Treehouse, I thought you might know what I could do with this stuff and give me some advice on what to do with it. Now, people, Mickey Finn, of course, was the other half of T-Rex during their pomp, to say the least. This fella has, as he said now, boxes of quarter-inch tapes, ephemera, letters, etc., etc. Now, Andy, I know Daniels, who leads the T-Rex-tacy tribute band and is pretty much the authority on it. I'll get in touch with him. But that made my heart race faster when I read that bit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, but we'd moved house and we'd left it all in the shed. And
no, it apparently...
Oh,
this
I'm
is
so relieved
stuff.
They've still got it.
They've still got it, but what to do with it? I mean, this is... We don't know what it is, and this is like when... Do you remember when we opened that safe on Five Live? That was... Somebody had a safe that they'd been in their cellar since they bought the house and never opened. It was Al Capone's vault all over again. And... they opened it live on air, and there was two VHS tapes in it with nothing particularly interesting on them.
And also, a year or so back, our George Harrison tape.
Oh, yes!
With the great George Harrison.
Explain to people where somebody called up and said...
A relative had passed away, and they were going through the house, and they found a drawer that sort of said 1969 George Harrison interview.
Real big,
radio station, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah, and it couldn't be found anywhere.
And they didn't have a reel-to-reel machine. So they sent it in to us, and we played it live on the radio. Great excitement to discover it was some sort of agricultural expert with the name George
Harrison. The tape didn't lie. It was George Harrison. It was just a George Harrison, not the George Harrison.
I
don't believe these squibs can be damped three times. We've done it three, and so we'll keep on top of this, everyone. But we seem to be sitting on lost 70s trove. And now I realise subconsciously that's where my song, which I am going to sing, I will sing it.
Is it in the style of T-Rex then?
up to a point. It's more of a sea shanty.
Oh!
but I'll bring us there as soon as you like. Of course, there's plenty to get through. If you don't mind, I'll just do another one after it. This is from our friend Bob. I can't remember what kind of subject this fits under. But anyway, it says... My old man was a window cleaner, not houses, but commercial properties. Indeed, his first job after the war was the magnificent glass structure on St Pancras Station in London. With caustic soda, he burned off the paint covering the glass now that the blackout had ended. But that's another story. In the early 1960s, he managed to get himself a job as the resident window cleaner at the newly opened London Hilton on Park Lane. He worked there along with his cousin. At the time, remember, the Hilton was the place to stay for visiting Americans. One day, whilst cleaning out a prestigious penthouse, they found themselves inside Sammy Davis Jr.'s suite. Naturally, around the room were some of Sammy's props, so the old man, of course, was soon strutting his stuff with Sammy's top hat on his head and his cane and his white silk scarf slung around his neck. As he whisked off the scarf for the big finale he was singing, it somehow flew out of his hands, across the suite, and straight into his bucket of dirty water for cleaning windows. They quickly wrung out the scarf and put it back over the chair where they found it and legged it. As far as they know, Sammy Davis Jr. performed at the Palladium that night in his top hat and towels with this dirty old rag around his neck. Yep, there's no business like it. Bravo, Bob.
Wow.
Of course you put on... The window cleaners, they had to come in to do the insides. You see Sammy Davis's top hat and cane there. What are you going to do? Give us something over there, Pep.
Well, funny enough, we had a socially distanced street party last Friday for Feet Day. And my neighbour, Beryl, who ran the John Denver fan club in the UK, was telling me how she went and saw Sammy Davis Jr. several times, perhaps that very concert.
Yeah.
I will ask her if he was wearing a slightly damp-looking scarf that night. But she wrote to him and told him that his show was wonderful and she'd enjoyed it more than the Sinatra one she'd been to a few weeks before. And he wrote back.
As a gentleman.
Thank you.
Old school.
Those proper stars.
I was talking on Twitter about Sammy Davis, who probably, other than the Beatles and Bowie, I have the most records of.
Why Beryl mentioned it. She saw that you'd said it and she thought you had
a distant street party.
We did. We all sat on our own front drives.
I mean this from love. Your street sounds like a tyranny. The other week you had to rush out, didn't you? Hold on, something else you were doing and... You've got a newsletter between you all. That sounds to me like a slice of hell.
No, it's very much not your street.
No,
very much.
Not up my street, that particular one. This is going back quite a way. This is when we're... That is fine. All the subjects remain open. And I'm afraid there's no name attached to this. I do apologise. But it was our old subject, what we were given as lines at school.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, on the subject of being given lines you never forget at school, Mr. Robertson, an English teacher and a singer in a soul band, once told me to write out 500 times, "Procrastination is the end of everything nature doth intend." It's Shakespeare, I believe. Anyway, it's an old subject, but I know your doors are always open. So he had to write out 500 times, "Procrastination is the end of everything nature doth intend," which is fine. But the bit that, of course, leaps out from that is Mr. Robertson, an English teacher and a singer in a soul band.
Whoa!
I can't imagine any of my teachers, when I look back at them, they look like the cast of The Happiest Days of Your Life. Any of them at night, getting up there and building up Buttercup. This was unbelievable that he had a teacher who was just an English teacher, but at night was a soul singer. Now, there, the secret lives of teachers. I'll tell you this. Mr. Bullock, Peter Bullock, who I hope is still with us, but it's unlikely. He seems as old as Methuselah when we taught us, probably only in his 30s. Dear Mr. B., when we, because our school was split into two halves, the lower school and upper school, just a comprehensive, but they could only take so many boys in West Greenwich Lower, and then you went to the other school, West Greenwich Upper, two streets away. But when we left him, we got together, which is kind of nice for a bunch of kids to do, to buy him a present. And I don't know why, said I'd seen in Deptford High Street a Cruet set. Right, which again, like your pokers and all of that by your fire, you don't often see a cruet set.
No.
The little tiny mustard with the little tiny spoon, salt and pepper. And it was chrome. It was in chrome. And we bought it and we presented it to him. Now, and I don't say this in inference, and God love him, but it was at the time, but caused a minor wave of sensation, because we knew there was no Mrs. Bullock. We knew that. And looking back, that maybe nature wasn't listening in that way. We don't know. Until we gave him his cruet set, and he said, that is going to look lovely on our dinner table. And our dinner table? Absolutely fine. But we all thought, who's the hour? And possibly it was in a civil partnership before they were known. Who knows? But I remember the cruet set unlocked just a glimpse into the private life of Mr. Bullock. And never was there a braver teacher to be at a Deptford school with a name like Bullock. I give you one guess at what his nickname was. Something from you, Peps.
Well, this has been sitting here for a while, so thank you for your patience, Darren in Scotland. This is Jobs That No Longer Exist, subtitle Pride Comes Before a Fall. In the early 80s, after I left college at 18, I stumbled into a job as a board marker for a high street bookmaker.
Hmm.
This job has long since been replaced by the ubiquitous banks of computer screens. And in those days, it was strictly horses, dogs and football. My job was to put up the racing sheets at the start of the day using magnetic strips onto a huge whiteboard the length of the shop. Then, as the odds were called out over the speakers, would write them next to the horses' names.
Mm.
After the race, I wrote out top finishers and starting prices for each. Anyway, part two. Pride comes before a fall. This job required certain accuracy, speed and precision. If you couldn't quickly work out whether 5-4 was shorter or longer than 72, the punters would give you a mouthful. If the counter staff, the bet settler or the punters couldn't read your writing, then you'd get abuse and asked not to work there again. I soon discovered I had a surprising talent for handwriting precision. My chiselled copper plate capital lettering engendered plaudits far and wide across Birmingham. Other bookies headhunted me for their shops. After one particularly busy Saturday, six race meetings, the shop I was working at was visited by the area manager. On his way out, he beckoned me over and, gesturing towards the board, said, "Is that your handiwork, lad?" Yes, I beamed. He went on to say they were opening a new shop on 4th Street and could I come along and do the job for their opening day? I was delighted and boasted for the next couple of weeks about my accolade. At this point, I perhaps need to introduce the parallel story. 6 months earlier, I had recommended a friend of my brother's, Ian, for the same job. He was a first-year art student and, once settled in on quieter days, amused himself by drawing sporting scenes on the areas of the whiteboard. Horses jumping fences with jockeys in silks, a greyhound emerging from the traps. Now, on the fateful Saturday that the area manager asked me to work at the new shop, there were several of Ian's images scattered around the shop, and because I was accustomed to them, I hardly noticed. Back to the new opening. The area manager and shop manager greeted me enthusiastically and said, "Here's the lad, you'll be impressed." Took me to one side, pointed at the whiteboards and said, "Right, so horses crossing a finishing line here, perhaps a Birmingham City striker scoring a goal over there, and maybe an Aston Villa one on the other wall." The blood drained from my face as the penny dropped. He had mistaken me for Ian. And in my glowing pride, I had done nothing to disabuse him. I started to drown in a sea of panic. I just nodded inanely. Not wishing to let the team down, I flicked through a few pages of Sporting Life and began amateurish attempts at replacing and replicating Ian's work. My horse and jockey looked like Peter Crouch on a Weimaraner. My greyhounds were wizened foxes chasing Bugs Bunny. My footballers looked more like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. No amount of redrawing was making any difference. I now know how that Spanish lady must have felt after renovating the portrait of Jesus. My fate was sealed when the board marker arrived and wondered who this was messing around with marker pens. I handed them over, said, "There you go, mate," and legged it.
Yeah.
I never mentioned this incident again and certainly didn't explain to Ian why he didn't get any return invitations to the new shops. I'm in my mid-50s and this is in my top 5 embarrassing moments.
Well, he seems to be foisted on him there, Peps, rather than actually, it wasn't his fault. And it does give us a subject. Have you ever had to bolt out of a job? I've run out of a job, and I'll give us, if anyone out there who's ever, like our correspondent, had to leg it out of a job because of a simple misunderstanding. Now, we're going to take a little advert break, but before we do, I'm going to give you this song.
Oh, here we are.
there's a collective sound of heads going into hands there. But I don't know, what else can I do with it? What else can I do with it? McCartney woke up with that song, Scramble Legs, Oh Baby, I Love Your Legs. That was the original words when he woke up and did Yesterday. So this came to me in the shower, possibly by that T-Rex mail we had, and it's called I Live in the 70s. And bear with it, I'm not a songwriter, but I don't know what else to do with this. Now, I'm shrinking from this, you can tell.
Okay. Should I look away? Would that be helpful?
No, I just don't know what else to do with it. So I'm going to sing this, and this is a song I literally wrote in the shower before the show, maybe to start a brand new career. Everyone says, God knows you need it. Here we go. It says, I live in the 70s. I live in the 70s, charts full of Bowie and lots of cheese. I live in the 70s, Viva 71. I live in the 70s, where I first heard ABBA and first heard Squeeze. I live in the 70s, Viva 72. I live in the 70s, lots of Mark Bolans and Brian Ferries. I live in the 70s, Viva 73. Now, all I've got to do is come up with seven more verses, and I've got something there. I've got something there. Because if you don't see yourself whistling that after this, and when I come up with lots of Mark Bolans and Brian Ferries, oh, I'm on a hot streak. We'll do some adverts. We'll be right back.
Also from Something Else.
Mel Gedroych is quilting. Listen to Mel and good friend Andy Bush as they learn a great new skill and tell some brilliant stories, all whilst having some good, wholesome fun.
In a nutshell, I took a pair of scissors and I went into my husband's wardrobe. Now, this comes from a shirt that I bought him that I know he doesn't like. So I'm testing him by...
this is brilliant.
Yeah, by finding out when he discovers
amazing
that the shirt has got a big patch out of the back of it.
Wow, and which area of the shirt is this taken from?
Bottom right.
Okay.
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
And here we go again, and I defy anyone not to have that I Live in the 70s song.
I live in the 70s.
Now, I know it's not a completed work yet. I'm no songwriter, but I now, of course, want the audience to suggest other verses for this, please. I've done all the heavy lifting. You're getting no credit for
you
it.
You got up to 73?
73. But it's chronology, the chronology is all over the place. But the idea that I think I've used all my rhymes up now for 70s. I've used lots of cheese.
78, I'd like cheese. To be particularly special, the year of my birth.
Okay, well, anything you can help us with there, and who knows, in a few weeks, I might be able to do a full five-minute version of that song. I know it to build an audience. Give us some other verses for that, because that was particularly something, I think. Have you got something quick, Peps, before we bring in our caller?
I have the Monsters and Illnesses Your Parents Made Up.
Mm-hmm. Because this you've got your screaming abdabs, you've got your collie wobbles. I used to think St. Vitus Dance was made up, but apparently that's a real thing, St. Vitus Dance. I know there were imaginary monsters that some people will invent as well. What's that correspondence?
Well, Greg Taylor's parents have obliged. To encourage my brother and I to get to bed and settle down, my parents told us about the 9 o'clock horses.
Oh.
If you weren't in your bedroom with teeth clean, door shut and perfectly quiet before 9 p.m, you would be whisked away by the 9 o'clock horses. These horses would hear any noise in your bedroom and, if it was after 9 o'clock, galloped up the stairs, put you on their backs and rode off.
Wow. Oh, man, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that and then originate it as a children's book. It's brilliant. That is brilliant. I mean, there always was the thing in our house, in the flat, the toilet was upstairs. And I don't think I'm alone in thinking I had to get back downstairs before the flush stopped. Or some kind of, bear would get me. I used to think I was alone in that, but Peter Cook says it in a sketch, or Dudley Moore actually says it in the sketch, that if I don't get back downstairs by the time the flush stops, something terrible is going to happen to me.
No!
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, you have to put some age on it, even a simple function like going to the toilet. So any of you, those you have as well, were taken. So what we're after is more verses for I Live in the 70s, certainly rituals you've inflicted on yourself, and there was something in the first half, I can't remember now anyway. But we have a caller, don't we, Pep?
We do. We have Michael.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Michael.
Hello. Good morning. Hi.
Yeah, thank you. Very good as gold, Michael. When you listen to this back, apart from being absolutely appalled at the editing job we've done on your best story,
yes.
You'll hear my song just before the break. I think we're onto
good.
Something here. It's the very first song I've ever written, and it's not the first song I was on. I'm on several records, but I'd like your opinion on it.
So,
why are you tugging our coat today? What have you got for us?
Well, it was when a few weeks ago you did Were You Ever Given Lines at School?
Yes, indeed.
The story, I'll tell a story before I get to what the line was.
Here comes the edit. Anyway, go on.
Here comes the edit, yeah. When in primary school, it's funny because I seem to have committed all my crimes when I was a kid at primary school rather than later. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. But when at primary school, I think I was about 9 or 10, me and my friends on the way home from school, there was this sort of about a mile long path from one road right up to the other. It was a footpath. Mm-hmm. I live in High Wycombe, and it was all the wood factories were below us. So along this footpath, it was about, like I say, about a mile long, and on there was a sort of a 10-foot fence, and with a 20-foot drop on the other side down to Urquhart's furniture factory.
Urquhart's.
Yes. Yes.
Spell Urquhart's. How's Urquhart being spelled?
Ercols. Urquhart's Furniture, surely.
No, I never heard of Urquhart's Furniture. No, I don't want to get.
Mid-century stuff, isn't that what they call it now?
Don't let it get around.
Where do you buy all furniture. Your stuff then? IKEA?
No.
Yes.
Deptford High Street. You could buy everything in Deptford High Street, certainly in Fantos. So here we are. You're walking along this path.
With my friends. With my friends. So it was a sort of a 10-foot fence with about a 20-foot drop on the other side. And along here, there was about halfway, there was a footpath between the factories, because behind Urquhart's was G-Plan, and there was a footpath across the railway down to another school. So that was about halfway along. But also along there, on the opposite side of the footpath to the factories, was where we lived, and there was a back gate to be able to sort of get up to our house. So we used to walk along this footpath, but as you went along, there was this waste patch of ground where there used to be wild beetroot growing. Now,
I've got to tell you, my head is swimming with the map.
I've got a perfect mind map of High Wycombe.
And now I'm onto the beetroot. I'm wondering if I'm hearing this at all. Wild beetroot?
Yes, I know. I was a bit... We didn't realise really what it was at the time until we had to write our lines out at school, and then we discovered actually what it was, that we'd been throwing over the fence at the workers on their forklift trucks. With this wild beetroot growing in the wasteland. We used to just pick
delicious
up...
Delicious wild beetroot that would have cost you about 95 quid these days in a street market. Threw them at fellas on stack.
Yeah, well, we used to lob them over the 10-foot fence and try and hit these guys carrying their wood along on their forklift trucks. And they used to splatter.
Michael, can I tell you that in Nintendo, that what they called it, if you put that on a Switch, people, it'd be a sensation. It'd be like the Angry Birds thing again. But you have lived it.
I know. It's so realistic as well, isn't it? This vision us lobbing this beach. I cannot think why we did it originally, but it was fun.
Nine-year-old boys, that's why.
Well done, exactly. Blokes on stacker trucks. Yep, there you go.
The great thing was that these guys, of course, couldn't get near us. I mean, they were way down there and we were completely safe on this footpath until after a little while, they stuck one man at one end of the footpath and another at the other end and some guy in the middle. And as we were lobbing this stuff over, thinking it was just so funny, these guys moved in on us and then finally caught us. And then at school, they obviously found out which school we went to, and I had to sit with my friends in the hall writing 100 times, "I will not throw beetroot at the workers of the factory." And that is when I found out it was beetroot, because we didn't know what it was that we'd be throwing. But, and that's how I discovered it was beetroot.
The teacher sat around, what should make them write? And talk about the bald-faced truth. I shall not throw beetroot at the workers in
the factory.
Soviet Russia for that.
I know. It's great, isn't it?
But you, I'd like to think, though, that when the security people who nicked you went back to the factory, they were furious. So what'd you do that for? Well, he said, "I'm not going to get any beetroot now. My missus waits for me every Thursday night. We have a beautiful salad, and you stop that. You were doing the heavy lifting for them."
If we could have only found a few cabbages and carrots and things, they could have had a meal, couldn't they?
Well, bless you, Michael. Thank you very much indeed for that.
That's all right. Great show, by the way. Great show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. See you soon.
Thank you very much, Michael. So, until that point, I'd never considered wild beetroot.
No.
Imagine what you'd get for that now. Man.
Foraged wild
exactly.
Beetroot,
locally sourced foraged beetroot. How about this from Sue? Here we go. This is from Sue. I know you don't expect your listeners to send in documented evidence of their tales, but in this instance, the young one is over 100 years old, so I thought it might be appreciated.
Ooh.
Now, obviously, we can't deliver that here and stuff, but it'd probably be on the Instagram thing. Like last week, the clairvoyant thing about they got in touch, she did a drawing of this man he'd never met. And we saw that, you can see it there, but this backs up the story. She says, "It concerns my great-grandfather, Ernie Crisp." Oh, no. I can never knuckle down and just get straight through a story. Too much fascinates me in everything. Ernie Crisp. There's plenty there. Quentin's elder brother, plainly. My good friend when I was little was Ernie Finn. I don't think you really...
Nice
Mickey
name.
Finn. This is all coming round now. Anyway, let's start it again. Sober up. "It concerns my great-grandfather, Ernie Crisp, and a..." "It concerns my great-grandfather, Ernie Crisp, and the story and photographs that appeared about him in the Daily Sketch on Tuesday, the 11th of June, 1912. The story was about his tame blackbird called Joe that he taught to whistle." Oh, everyone plump up a big old cushion. It's going to be something, ain't it? The feature alongside the item on how a Cunard had declined to accept remuneration from the White Star Line for their services in rescuing survivors of the Titanic. That's the feature next to it. It also, the same page, says about a visit from the Duchess of Sutherland to Paddington Workhouse, where she had a guard of honour made of several baby inmates. Yes, they used the word baby inmates, who sat on tiny chairs and looked very happy. Anyway, this is not the part of the story I was going to tell, but it's all good. You know, sometimes they can go on, but when you're hearing about the Cunard Line and baby inmates. So she says, back to Ernie, who ran a hardware shop in Walthamstow. The article says, "When the Daily Sketch went to photograph Joe, our photographer gave Joe..." This is the blackbird, by the way, not Ernie Crisp. "When our photographer went to photograph Joe, the photographer gave him a couple of worms, whereupon Joe whistled notes that Walthamstow residents understand to mean, 'Are you working?'" And she puts brackets and says, "I've no idea what this means." And I don't.
No.
I mean, is it like I don't know what it'll be, but she says in 1912 there was a phrase you could whistle that basically meant, "Are you working?" Anyway, it continues. "The photographer took the hint, and while he was busy setting up his camera, Joe next struck up, If you want to know the time, ask a policeman. Now, they're very soothing here. It's a blackbird singing, if you want to know the time, ask a policeman. Two other dancing titles were also given Admirable Time and Tune in response to a call for an encore. Joe then whistled very clearly The Old Folks at Home. He sang it in a swinging style. Remember, I'm quoting from a 1912 daily sketch here, and Sue finishes. My grandfather Ernie was quite a colourful character all round. Family legend has it he used to catch sparrows and dye them yellow and sell them as canaries. So maybe this story is not entirely true, but they'll have the daily sketch about it, and he did have 10 kids to feed. So how about that from Sue?
Wow, in a swinging style, I think.
He sang, not only did he do this phrase that means, are you working? He sang, if you want to know the time, ask a policeman. And then, as an encore, sang The Old Folks at Home in a swinging style. Thank you very much indeed, Sue. Nothing's cheering me up like that. Something from you, Peps.
This from Vince, and he's just called it Touristy Things, which I think we did do something vaguely
about
tourism.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did.
Whilst on holiday in Greece with my devout and quite serious parents, we spent a delightful early afternoon with a relatively liquid lunch. My mother then announced we were in desperate need of culture and had a plan. And it was for this reason we found ourselves walking through the doors of an ancient Orthodox church. The coolness of the air, the motes of dust dancing in the shafts of light, and iconography were all that any tourist seeking religious comfort could ask for. My mother oohed and aahed as I propped up what I was now aware was my rather inebriated father, who was swaying as if aboard a vessel on the high seas. My mother was in a loose summer dress and hat. I was in linen trousers and a crisp white t-shirt, and my father, a 70-year-old ex-Midland bank manager, sporting a rather garish pair of swimming shorts and a t-shirt emblazoned with a clown drinking from a large cocktail fishbowl. Not his choice of clothing, but the result of losing to me in an ill-tempered game of cards the previous evening. We turned a corner in the church and were immediately accosted by a diminutive and very vocal old lady clad head to toe in black, who was very unhappy. After berating us for a few moments, she thrust some folded black linen into my father's hands and in broken English said, "Where?" My father raised himself up, offered a grave nod of understanding and gave the practiced smile of a man who'd run a banking new cross and reverentially took the linen and with due solemnity placed it on his head.
Oh.
Satisfied he had restored our family's reputation and calmed her, he added a theatrical nod that wobbled slightly as he tried to hold his head covering in place. Rather than being soothed, the little lady was now apoplectic and in a voice one could not imagine befitting of God's house, called for a young, large man to come over and deal with us. He loomed over my father and removed the linen from his head. Then, muttering something, looked down at my father's head covering and shook it to reveal it was indeed a pair of trousers. It was my father's shorts that were deemed disrespectful, and the old lady wanted him to retain the decorum. My father placed a shaking hand on my shoulder to steady himself while he stepped into the trousers while the lady left shaking her head. My father was mortified, my mother embarrassed, and the little old lady kept a beady eye on us for the rest of our visit.
Yeah, I thought it was the T-shirt doing it, but it was actually the stride. Just putting him on his nut. This is, as you said earlier on in the show, we are asking for, why would you buy a baby that? This is from Andy in New Zealand. When our first son was born, the first baby in the family for 10 years, my father-in-law and mother-in-law presented their newborn grandson and their only daughter with 24 used Reader's Digest magazines. Nothing else, no flowers, no baby clothes, just 24 old Reader's Digest copies. The relationship never recovered. Now that seems pointed. Why would you give a baby 24 Reader's Digest, which I understand is still going? I had no idea, but it's still going. Got a quick one there, Peps?
I like to think that somewhere a charity shop received the most beautiful gift for a newborn child instead of the Reader's Digest.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's a doctor's waiting room with a selection of rattles on it. But yes, absolutely.
This is from Mike. It happened while swimming. He said two stories.
Well, give us one. We've gassed on enough.
Oh, okay.
Murder your darlings.
Well, let's go with the second one. It starts a bit wobbly, but we're okay. My wife's mum has multiple sclerosis and is in a wheelchair, but we don't like her to miss out when on holiday. Our niece got married in Cyprus, so all of my wife's family, and she's one of five, rented villas. During a lovely afternoon at our brother-in-law's villa, our wife's oldest sister, Wendy, decided that her mum should join the grandchildren in the pool. She insisted we'd always taken her out in the water in a rubber ring in Italy, and her late husband had had no problem lifting her in and out. Not to be outdone, my wife's brother Robert and I helped lower Hazel out of her wheelchair into the rubber ring. Success! Very happy. The grandkids very amused about Nanny being in the water. After it was noted, after a while, that she was starting to slip through the ring and we had to get her out. Nobody factored in the drop between pool, edge and water. Pushing from below, heaving from above, six of us managed to roll her up and out, everyone laughing throughout. When we asked Wendy, the eldest sister, how her husband had done this all alone in Italy, she suddenly said, "Ah, now we only did it off the sand on the beach and back again. Looked a bit hard getting her out of the pool." Please note, Hazel was amused, is still with us, and had her 80th birthday last year.
Well, bravo.
Not a pool party.
Bravo, Hazel. There's a piece of film, which one day I'll upload. I always meant to show it on the tours. And my very good friend, Jeff Pope, the writer, both families are on holiday, and he was delivering to my son a gag. You've seen this, you've
been.
My daughter put it online once, yes. He's had a couple of drinks, and he's saying an amusing piece to camera while he's in the pool with his arms against the side of the pool, and he's turned to Mancy and he's saying, "Oh yes, here we all are in Florida, and the weather's hot," and he was doing some little diatribe in his cups, and in the background I walk into the shot. I've got no idea that they're filming, and I was convinced that the steps to the pool were there, and you just see me an absolute like Stan Laurel just keep walking, and the shock on my face as I hit the water and then come up again, and I forgot how to tread water and everything, and I'm going and Jeff's thinking he's getting all these laughs through his speech, and I'm going but yeah, I just was convinced that the stairs were there. I disappear under the water, but it's the third time up, and I'm going confused as to what on earth is happening. Anyway,
when Mancy posted that, I think I watched it 20 times in a row.
It's the happiest thing
I've ever seen.
One of these days when I'm when we have a second tier on this, it will be accessible along with all my songs. But in the meantime, start the theme music if you would, Phil.
1, 2, 3, 4. Climb up, come in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away.
In the treehouse,
the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away.
In the treehouse,
take it away, Daddy!
Always do, Wisby, and of course, tremendous thanks to my co-host, Louise Napoleon Pepper, on the other side of town, Phil Wilding, who's the devil's own job always of collating this into a coherent mass. Everyone over at Something Else for giving us this platform, but as always, chiefly yourselves. I'll see you Saturday.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.